It's a Friday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's episode, we get our first preview of the kind of valuable information that consultants can expect to hear at this year's upcoming Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California, with a feature report from Taylor Charlstrom. Kylie Harlan will be in a little bit later on, and she reports on a recent grape field day showcasing new varieties that resist Pierce's disease. And I'll have a check-in of regional and national agricultural news beginning with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
According to the final grape crush report of 2021 from the California Department of Food and Agriculture, the 2021 crush totaled 3,880,141 tons, up 9.3% from the 2020 crush of 3,551,312 tons. Red wine varieties accounted for the largest share of all grapes crushed at 2,033,152 tons, up 11.6% from 2020. White wine variety crush totaled 1,601,154 tons, up 0.6% from 2020. Tons crushed of raisin type varieties totaled 137,976, up 225% from 2020. And tons of crushed table type varieties totaled 107,858, up 13.2% from 2020. The grape crush report includes a total number of tons crushed for concentrate production. In determining grape tonnage crushed for concentrate production, each processor was required to report the estimated equivalent tons of grapes crushed for grape concentrate. For the 2021 season, this total was at 254,381 tons, 6.6% of the 2021 grape crush total. This report provides only the aggregate figure for grapes crushed for concentrate production and does not include information by district, type, or variety. The 2021 average price of all varieties was $862.02, up 26.8% from 2020. Average prices for the 2021 crop by type are as follows. Red wine grapes, $1,773.75. That's up 34.7% from 2020. White wine grapes at $675.53, up 20.9% from 2020. Raisin grapes at $291.41, up 16.3% from 2020. And table grapes at $182.92, up 14.5% from 2020. Chico State University Farm is providing another chance to pick peaches from the orchard. Chico State says this year's crop was pretty good and a drought did not really impact the peaches. Last year, the university farm sold more than 21,000 pounds of peaches. The peaches are then sold for $2 a pound, and all the money raised goes right back into paying for orchard expenses. Fresh Del Monte is excited to share the remarkable progress it has made on the road to achieving key 2030 goals the company committed to with the Science-Based Targets Initiative, goals that have become increasingly more urgent as the U.S. and countries across the globe experience intense heat waves and drought conditions. The company was the first global marketer of fruits and vegetables to commit to SBTI in 2020 and has already reduced greenhouse gas emissions for Scope 1 and 2 by 22% compared with its 2019 baseline through a variety of operational enhancements, including the purchase of 6 more efficient vessels meeting the most stringent emission control regulations. With the addition of the new vessels, Fresh Del Monte estimates a savings of nearly 13,000 metric tons of fuel each year. Significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions were also achieved in many of FDP's facilities, including its poultry operation at MPC. Currently, the company is only 5.5 percentage points from its 2030 goals, with its reduction emissions by which is the reduction of emissions by 27.5%, a goal it intends to surpass. Looking forward, Fresh Del Monte remains committed to being a leader in agricultural farming, having made great progress on several of its other sustainability initiatives. The company is releasing its 2020 sustainability report this fall to share more on its advancements and achievements and to inspire others to build a more sustainable world. According to the USDA Natural Agricultural Statistics Service 2022 California Table Olive Probability Survey Report, the 2022 California Table Olive forecast is 20,000 tons, down considerably from last year's crop of 46,500 tons, according to a survey conducted by USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Pacific Regional Office. Bearing acreage is estimated at 12,000, which results in a yield of 1.67 tons an acre. The Manzanilla production forecast is 18,500 tons. Cevallano production is forecast at 1,400 tons, and other varieties are expected to total 100 tons. A freeze during February damaged developing buds and negatively impacted production. Growers reported variable crop yields by both varieties in the area. Water availability, labor costs, and marketing remain issues for California olive growers, with many uncertain how much of their crop will be economical to harvest. Following late last week's rain, stone fruit growers in California are trying to determine what the impacts of the rain are. John McClarty of HMC Farms in Kingsburg, California, says he thinks it was a quarter of an inch of rain, but that is unprecedented for this time of the year. He says right now some stone fruit looks like there's hardly any impact, while others there's quite a bit. There are definitely some effects. They just don't know what the severity of those will be. Also, if it's a blip that affects the current harvest or extends out. To date, HMC is 65 to 75% of the way through their crop, which is ahead of schedule. Some peach varieties are between 4 to 7 days ahead of schedule, while plums are 2 weeks ahead of last year. It's optimal ripening conditions. The quality is really good this season, according to McClarty. Looking ahead, production on nectarines will go into September and peaches and plums into early October. He says we'll just have to see if the later varieties continue to pick in advance of their normal harvest date or if they start to move back a little. It's a little too early to tell. And as for demand, McClarty says it's very strong and consistent. July and August are the stone fruit months. Also, a lot of the peach crop from South Carolina and Georgia, which was already impacted by frost, is starting to wind down. So that always increases stronger demand for California. In turn, pricing is stronger and staying stronger compared to last year. The research and development facility being built in the McFarland area by Fruit Breeder International Fruit Genetics LLC comes with hopes that it will attract not just top scientific talent, but also partner companies in a global push for plants that are better suited to extreme weather, drought, disease, and labor shortage. IFG had employee recruitment in mind when it designed the property's series of laboratories, including what would be Kern County's first private sector, federally certified clean plant growing facility. The facility, university-like campus, was laid out for top biologists from around the country to feel at home and motivated, according to CEO Andy Higgins. But that's not what Higgins was referring to. He said the company's vision was that if you build it, they will come. He meant IFG expects to attract and collaborate with automation companies and those using sensor-based algorithms for optimizing moisture and sunlight. The $14 million project follows a recent opening of a similar facility in Wasco by fellow fruit breeder Sun World International LLC. Both are introducing high technology to Kern County agriculture in ways to extend across the globe.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Taylor Charlstrom is in now with a report from the upcoming Crop Consultant Conference.
The Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California is coming up at the end of September this year on the 28th and the 29th, and it's not an event you're going to want to miss. The conference will feature two separate tracks for PCAs and CCAs for continuing education hours. Dr. Jerome Pierre, a senior agronomist with Qualitech who also serves on the WRCCA Board of Directors, will be speaking at the conference this year about potassium management under challenging soil and supply conditions.
You know, the Ukraine war, the war with Russia, you know, is definitely limiting the global supply of potassium. So the prices are way up. And a lot of our nut crops that we have in the valley and all the perennials for sure, fruits and vegetables rely heavily on potassium fertilization. And so it's really a challenge for growers to decide, you know, is it worth spending this money on this potassium? And of course, my answer would be yes. But, you know, they have to really look at the return on investment on that and make some decisions on which direction to go. You know, do I go liquid? Do I go dry? What's the best source? You know, can I go cheaper and put up with some problems with some of those less expensive sources of potassium?
Pierre noted that potassium, while expensive, just like many other nutrients this year, is not one that a grower is going to want to skimp out on.
Especially for the perennial crops, for the water relations, you know, we're short on water, keeping the trees out of stress, disease resistance, return fruitfulness on perennials, making sure you get good flowering after you've had a big crop. You know, all those things are really important things that potassium does. So, and if you look at the uptake and removal numbers for potassium compared to nitrogen in perennials and in fruiting crops, typically potassium ranks higher than nitrogen. So, and I'm not quite sure where prices are at because it's dangerous to give me pricing, but I'm pretty sure that potassium, from what I'm hearing, is really at very high levels compared to nitrogen. So, I mean, the nitrogen, everybody is going to put that on, but, you know, they're really the next most important thing would be the potassium. And so, yeah, it's a real challenge, and deciding which source and how much you're going to pay and what you're going to do. You know, the challenge also being that there is some soil supply that you could take advantage, but it's not obvious from the numbers that you get from a soil test exactly how many pounds the soil will supply. So tissue testing, very important. You know, good water management, making sure your trees are healthy, your root system is healthy. There's a lot of things that can be done.
Consultants in attendance at the Crop Consultant Conference aren't going to want to miss out on hearing about this topic in order to help their growers improve their bottom line.
PCA recommends pesticides to keep the crop from going backwards in yield. But fertilizer is the one thing that can really help the grower increase their yield and quality, especially. Potassium is very important for sizing. You know, and I was just looking at almond pricing, and sizing really matters. So making sure you have good quality, good size nuts, you know, is going to make you more money. And also having a good, strong yield. I mean, most growers don't even want to talk about anything less than 3,000 pounds per acre these days. So, you know, I think the potassium is an important component of that. So the advisor needs to make the right decision on what's the right amount of potassium for the grower to put into the program along with all the other nutrients that they have to buy, you know. But, you know, it will impact the bottom line in terms of profitability for the grower. So, you know, it's you're really surfing a knife edge in terms of your advice for the customer and what the grower is going to want to pay, you know. But I think potassium is a good investment. It's just not as sexy as nitrogen. You know, when you put nitrogen on, you see the result right away, whereas potassium is a little bit more subtle. But if you don't do it, and you'll realize that you should have done it too late, you know, that's the problem. So it's a tricky thing. It's one of the more complicated nutrients out there. And in the past, really, growers didn't use a lot of potassium, but now they do, and they are seeing the benefit with these higher yields. So I think it is a critical component of a good program. And I think it's that the advisors will really want to understand how to make out those recommendations.
In the final weeks leading up to the conference at the end of September, we'll be covering more speakers' talks and what they'll be offering at the Crop Consultant Conference. Register today at progressivecrop.com. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. network on our trade show floor, and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
The latest Consumer Price Index released this week shows a continued increase in the cost of food in the United States. The food index increased 1.1% in July, the seventh consecutive monthly increase of 0.9% or more. The food at home index rose 1.3% in July as all six major grocery store food group indexes increased. The index for non-alcoholic beverages rose the most, up 2.3%, as the index for coffee rose 3.5%. The index for other food at home rose 1.8%, as did the index for cereals and bakery products. The index for dairy products increased 1.7%, and the index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs rose 0.5% in July after declining in June. The index for fruits and vegetables also increased 0.5% over the month. The overall consumer price index was unchanged in July after rising 1.3% in June, and a gasoline index fell 7.7% in July. New data released this week from USDA's Economic Research Service shows a growth in a number of farmers' markets is slowing. According to USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service, from 1994 to 2019, the number of farmers' markets rose from 1,755 to 8,771 in 2019, averaging growth of nearly 7% per year. Expansion began to slow in 2011 before eventually falling below a 1% per year increase between 2016 and 2017. Since then, and growth in the number of farmers' markets has remained modest and stable. A USDA ERS report found that shares of local food sales have increased at intermediate market outlets such as grocery stores, restaurants, and distributors. Increased availability of local products at these outlets corresponds with a plateau in purchases at direct-to-consumer outlets such as farmers' markets and contributes to the observed slower growth relative to the prior two decades. According to the 2019 National Farmers Market Manager Survey, about two-thirds of farmers' market vendors reported an increase in overall production. The Department of Agriculture this week has announced the availability of nearly $8 million to support the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program, Produce Prescription Program. The funding is part of USDA's American Rescue Plan efforts and will be administered by USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture. Gus NIP Produce Prescription Projects provide financial and non-financial incentives to income-eligible individuals and families to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables to improve dietary health through increased consumption of fruits and vegetables. By bringing together stakeholders from various parts of the food and healthcare systems, Gus NIP projects foster understanding to improve the health and nutritional status of participating households and use data to identify and improve best practices on a broad scale. The awards fund Gus NIP produce prescription meritorious applications from fiscal year 2021 that were highly ranked but could not be funded at the time due to budget constraints. 17 projects are being funded. For 75 years, the CHS Foundation has helped to develop the next generation of ag leaders for lifelong success. In honor of the milestone, the foundation is awarding $75,000 in grants for K-12 teachers to implement a project at their school that will engage students in experimental agricultural education. Funds will be awarded for projects that have a strong tie to agriculture and demonstrate how they will engage students in agricultural topics. Teachers are encouraged to dream big, but ideas include implementing a new ag class or pathway or purchasing agriculture equipment for hands-on learning. Written and video submissions will be accepted until October 1st. First place will be awarded $20,000, second place will receive $15,000, and third place will receive $10,000. An additional 12 finalists will be selected. Each will receive $2,500. The initiative is open to any K-12 educators in CHS trade territory. For more information about the program, log on to chsfoundation.org. U.S.-China tensions over House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan now raises questions over whether the growing dispute will impact U.S. trade with China. China fell short of its first-year Phase 1 deal obligations to buy U.S. farm goods by some $11 billion, and Biden administration U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai told House appropriators recently,
"Since last year, we have pressed the PRC to live up to its commitments under the Phase 1 agreement. Several rounds of difficult discussions made clear the limits of the PRC's interest in delivering on those obligations."
Now China has launched massive military exercises around Taiwan that alter a delicate security balance across the Taiwan Strait and threaten to upend relations with the United States. American Farm Bureau Federation Trade Advisor Dave Samuelson said earlier, AFBF still wants phase one commitments completed and U.S. and Chinese tariffs eased.
They could put some of these high tariffs back on U.S. products anytime. And not all tariffs, U.S. ag products to China have been granted waivers. Think about ethanol, dried distillers grains. There's still some things that face high tariffs. And we haven't got much in the way of sales to China because of that.
While President Biden had earlier directed his Commerce Secretary to review U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods, including steel, driving up prices for farm and other equipment.
The PRC's non-market industrial policies unfairly target U.S. workers, businesses, and key sectors.
For now, China-Taiwan watchers expect Beijing to target trade with Taiwan, announcing China will suspend imports of citrus fruits and some fish from Taiwan. Though China is also breaking off military and climate talks with the U.S. as the mood for cooperation on trade does not seem to be getting any better.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Kylie Harlan is in now. She reports on a recent grape field day showcasing new varieties that resist Pierce's disease.
Pierce's disease is common throughout all of California and is especially prominent in the southern portions of the state. This disease is very serious and can be detrimental to grape producers. Anna-Meek Schilder, director of University of California's Cooperative Extension Office in Ventura County and the Hansen Agricultural Research and Extension Center in Santa Paula, tells us more about the disease.
Pierce's disease was actually first identified in the 1800s in Anaheim, and there it was called Anaheim disease in grapes. And so it's been known for a while, but it wasn't known that it was caused by a bacterium for a while. So it is a bacterial disease that is spread by leafhoppers and spittlebug insects, and the symptoms are typically a necrosis of the edges of the leaf will start burning like a scorch-like symptom. Leaves will fall off. And very typically for Pierce's disease is that the petioles will remain attached, so it'd be like matchsticks. That is different from, say, vines having drought stress symptoms. You might also see, obviously, very serious symptom is shriveling of the berries. So the clusters will shrivel up. Another typical symptom for Pierce's is that the wood is not maturing evenly. So if you look at shoots as they mature, they become brown. But in this case, they'll be like green patches called green islands. And so there is that uneven maturation of the wood. I think that is typical. And so in the first year, you might see it on one shoot. And in the second year, as the bacteria start to block the xylem vessels. So xylem is the vessels that carry water and nutrients from the roots to the leaves. And the bacteria live in the xylem, and they basically clog up the vessels, causing some of these drought stress symptoms. But it's not exactly the same as drought stress. As the bacteria move into the permanent parts of the vine, the symptoms will come back every year, and they just get worse and worse every year until the whole vine dies. So within a period of 5 years, you will have lost a lot of the vines in a susceptible variety.
A field day was recently held to showcase new grape varieties that have been bred to resist Pierce's disease. Schilder brings us more details about these new varieties.
The resistance that these varieties have comes from a wild grape, Vitis arizonica, and it is bred into, you know, common grape cultivar backgrounds, like, you know, mixed with Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, the Vitis vinifera, and then it is back crossed. So the first cross, you have like 50% of the wild parent and 50% of the cultivated parent. And so when it's back crossed, you get more and more of the cultivated parent, but the resistance part was kept. And It is something biochemical that the wild grape does not allow the bacterium that causes Pierce's disease to multiply and gain entrance to the xylem vessels. So most known grape varieties are not resistant. I mean, there are some differences, obviously, in susceptibility. Some varieties are more susceptible, like Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and others are maybe less. Obviously, some of the Native American grapes, like Vitis labrusca, the muscadine grapes, they have some resistance as well, but those are not very good for winemaking. So these new varieties that have been bred by Dr. Andy Walker at UC Davis, they are Caminante Blanc, Ambulo Blanc, Passeange Noir, Caminar Noir, and Errante Noir have been specifically bred for resistance, and they are highly resistant. They haven't been grown widely yet, but where we had our extension meeting in the vineyard here in Oakview in Ventura County, they have performed so far really well. I mean, if you look at the vines, they look super healthy and green, you know, whereas in a normal vineyard, you might by this time of the year start to see necrotic edges, you know, die back of the vines if they have Pierce's disease. These ones look just perfectly healthy. So I think it'll hold up. I hope it will hold up for a long time. But like I said, they haven't been grown widely yet. And I think there's only three nurseries so far that have these varieties in sufficient quantities for farmers to buy them. The other thing is I wanted to mention is that these varieties were really quite productive. So in the local vineyard here, the Tomac family, they actually have to drop quite a bit of fruit. They said that they achieve about 6 tons to the acre, which is pretty good, and that they're thinking of planting these varieties also in other areas. Like in Santa Barbara, there is an area which is highly affected also by this disease. So I think for productivity, these vines are really also quite productive.
The four new varieties can decrease the use of insecticides and other inputs and be an effective part of an integrated pest management system.
Currently, the management techniques for Pierce's disease are, one, roguing of infected vines. So if you had a new vineyard and you started seeing the disease in just a few vines, and you can have that confirmed by a diagnostic lab to be sure, then the first thing to do is actually pull those vines out. It's pretty drastic, but that would prevent it from spreading throughout the vineyard. If the vineyard is already infected, you know, if the disease is present throughout much of the vineyard, I guess the main thing to do is to delay the inevitable by spraying insecticides for the insect vector. And that requires, you know, a lot of monitoring for the insect, as well as use of insecticides like imidacloprid, which is a neonicotinoid, has been found to be harmful to bees and other pollinators. And so that is one of the things that we prefer not to do, but that is part of a management package of integrated management. In some cases, they have actually used insecticides to spray citrus orchards near vineyards that host the glassy-winged sharpshooter. So high populations of the insects might be in the citrus orchard. They would also spray those orchards with insecticides. Other than that, if you use the resistant varieties, they can be grown, in essence, without insecticides. So you can use them to grow organic grapevines for sure. It's not that, you know, organic vineyards would still have to be sprayed with appropriate fungicides for powdery mildew and things like that, but you wouldn't have to do anything for control of Pierce's disease. They are highly resistant. So at this point, I think growers would have to make a choice, like, do they want to grow these varieties? We did do some wine tasting, and the wines are very, very good. They taste like vinifera grape wines. So I think they could definitely play a role in having a yield where maybe yield is not possible in some other areas. So say if people want to eliminate their diseased vineyards, they could replant with some of these varieties. The varieties were initially considered used for blending. So if you have those grapes, you could blend them with vinifera grapes and make wine blends, but they can also be made into their own wines. So I thought they would taste quite good, but so people can maybe start replacing diseased vineyards with these. They could also maybe grow them along edges. I mean, there is an edge effect in some cases where the vectors will move in from riparian areas and sort of feed on the outside of the vineyard first. And so there could be an effect of just planting the, you know, so many rows on the edge of the vineyard to these varieties to delay disease from coming into the rest of the vineyard. But yeah, I think once you grow these resistant varieties, there isn't anything you need to do for control of pierces. You don't have to spray any insecticides.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.